The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Wanna take a ride? Broadcasting from the sprawling outskirts of the Florida Everglades in the intellectual wilderness of South Lauderdale, the outer regions of humanity that people move to just because it doesn't snow. This is the Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, all right. Oh, hold on. Gotta turn the camera on. Welcome to a Thursday. Oh, boy. I got to tell you, this week has been I've been stretched kind of thin because, as you know, if you're a regular listener of the show, I've been doing double duty, not only hosting my own show and producing because I do everything here, but filling in for Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen over at the Bradcast. They will be back Monday, which is the best news I've had in a long time. But I'll tell you, it's kept me on my feet and it's kept me on top of everything that's happening, because not only do I have to do the research for you guys, I have to do it for them as well. There's a lot of news, once again, to get to today. But it's Thursday, so Howie Klein will be here. Before we get to any of that, I don't know about you, I need a laugh or three. So take it away. Lauren Mayer. Yes, Lauren Mayer. Take it away, Lauren Mayer.
Follow the fraud back to Trump. Follow the fraud back to Trump. Follow the fraud back to Trump. With a scandal every hour from how he clings to power while sliding down the drain. Maybe someone could teach him not to prove we must impeach him if he only had a brain. In his great and unmatched wisdom, Trump shows he really is dumb by acting quite insane. And the tweets he did send meant, where's the 25th Amendment? 'Cause he hasn't got a brain. Oh, if he tries to stiff requests from Adam Schiff, that committee chair will school Trump in a jiff. Watch him debunk Trump's latest junk. What a hunk. Watching this unstable genius ignore legit subpoenas about calls to Ukraine. But his claims aren't connecting. We can see that he's projecting, 'cause he hasn't got a brain or a heart or a spine or conscience or any sense of how government works, 'cause you can't impeach a member of Congress. Oh, we're off to start impeaching the criminal wizard of fraud. And polls we see show voters agree, as inquiry we applaud. If ever an obvious crook there was, the wizard of fraud is one, because his lame defense is ludicrously flawed. With Jared and Rudy in charge, oh God. We're off to start impeaching the criminal wizard of fraud.
Ah, the awesomeness of Lauren Mayer. Yes, find her on YouTube and on Facebook and Twitter and all that. Awesome. The awesomeness, the wizard of fraud. Okay, where to begin? Oh, my God, there's so much to get to, so I'm just going to jump in. And, yes, we will do it live today. Do it live, because there's so much breaking news.
We'll do it live. Fucking thing.
Okay. We'll do it live.
We'll do it live.
We'll do it live. Damn it.
I'll write it, and we'll do it live.
All right. Calm down, Bill. Calm down. The big breaking news story today, because you know there's at least one every day, two foreign business associates of Donald Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, have been charged with a scheme to route foreign money into U.S. elections. This according to a newly unsealed indictment. Their names are Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman. They were arrested last night at Dulles International Airport as they attempted to leave the country. And what we learned from the FBI's announcement today is they were each in the possession of a one-way ticket out of the country. Interesting, huh? By the way, they had lunch yesterday in D.C. with Rudy Giuliani. I wonder who tipped them off about the indictment. I'm guessing someone's going to investigate that because someone tipped them off because they were getting ready to flee the country. Just saying. They have been under investigation by the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan, and they were in court in Virginia today. The last I checked before we came on the air, the judge had said something along the lines of, the judge is holding them over. Oh, there's so, every time I look on Twitter, there's more stuff like this. Chuck Schumer said there are now new reports, very troubling, that the two Giuliani associates are being indicted on criminal charges by the Southern District of New York. Giuliani's been involved to his neck in this entire mess. He has an obligation to testify under oath so he can be asked questions. Okay. Rebecca Ballhaus from the Wall Street Journal says Rudy Giuliani tells the Wall Street Journal that they were headed to Vienna for business reasons. Yeah, right. He says they've traveled there between 3 and 6 times in the last 2 months and that he was scheduled to meet with them and they were returned in the coming days. Then why didn't they have a return ticket? You know, buy an open-ended ticket if you don't know when you're coming back. Just saying. Anyway, the judge, I guess, was deciding on bail or something. Almost every tweet in my feed is about them. Let me go back to the indictment. According to the indictment, Parnas, Fruman, and other defendants, quote, conspired to circumvent the federal laws against foreign influence by engaging in a scheme to funnel foreign money to candidates for federal and state office so that the defendants could buy potential influence with them. The indictment says Parnas and Fruman committed to raising $20,000 or more in 2018 for a, quote, then sitting U.S. congressman. We'll identify that person in a moment, from whom they also sought help in removing the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, who was removed not too long ago by the Trump administration. She's the one who's supposed to be testifying tomorrow, but although she's no longer the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, she still works for the State Department. Therefore, their prohibition on anyone cooperating with Congress will probably come into play, but of course they haven't said what's going to happen tomorrow yet. Anyway, back to the indictment. Fruman also donated $2,700 to this congressman who's identified in the indictment as Congressman One and also gave in Parnas's name. Both of them donated to Dallas area Republican Representative Pete Sessions, who actually lost in 2018 and is trying to make a comeback in a Waco-based district. And is believed to be Congressman One, as referenced in the indictment. That would be Pete Sessions, no relation to Jeff, although they seem to share the same amount of brain cells. To simplify, Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut tweeted out, "Let's be clear about what just happened. The two Russian-born ringleaders of the Ukraine scandal just got arrested for making hundreds of thousands of dollars of illegal contributions to Trump's re-election. FYI, none of this is on the level." So that's what Chris Murphy said. Here's Bill Sweeney. He's the assistant director of the FBI's New York field office in their little press announcement of the indictment just about an hour ago.
Last night at Washington Dulles International Airport, the FBI arrested Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman on campaign finance related charges as they attempted to leave the United States. Andrei Kukushkin was arrested in San Francisco shortly thereafter. David Correa, the fourth individual charged in today's indictment, is not yet in our custody. Campaign finance laws exist for a reason. The American people expect and deserve an election process that has not been corrupted by the influence of foreign interests, and the public has a right to know the true source of campaign contributions. Laws make up the fabric of who we are as a nation. These allegations are not about some technicality, a civil violation, or an error on a form. This investigation is about corrupt behavior, deliberate lawbreaking.
You hear that?
The FBI takes the obligation to tackle corruption seriously. There are no exceptions to this rule. We gather evidence, we collect facts, and we will act on them when appropriate. As Jeff mentioned, our investigation will continue.
The investigation will continue. So that's the official word from the FBI. Now, I recorded this update from NBC News a few hours ago. Things may have changed since then, but this is Tom Winter on the arrest of these two. What, you know, and all the news reports are identifying them as Russian-born. They are, but from what I can gather, what I understand is they're both American citizens now.
According to the indictment, on or about May or in June of 2018, Parnas and Fruman, the two people they were talking about, committed to raise $20,000 or more for a then-sitting U.S. congressman, identified as Congressman number one. In addition to that, they were also going to raise some funds here. I'm just going to kind of skim through this a little bit as far as another account that he had. At or around the same time, Parnas and Fruman committed to raising those funds for Congressman One. Parnas met with Congressman One and sought Congressman One's assistance in causing the U.S. government to remove or recall the then U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. Parnas's efforts to remove the ambassador were conducted, at least in part, at the request of one or more Ukrainian government officials. Moreover, in an effort to reach their contribution commitment to Congressman One and further their political goals, in about June 2018, after Fruman had already made the maximum $2,700 contribution to Congressman One, Fruman paid for another minimum $2,700 contribution to Congressman One that was made and reported in Parnas's name. Essentially, what we're talking about here is that these people were donating directly and illegally to a then-sitting U.S. congressperson.
Lovely.
It's not clear if that person is still in Congress. They're not identified in the court papers. In order to remove or recall the Ukrainian ambassador, something that actually did occur. In addition to that, they describe how money came from a foreign national through these men as part of their conspiracy to be donated to those political causes, as I mentioned before. As you stated, both are expected to appear here in court later today. I'm just going through the indictment now. It's a 21-page indictment that's been handed up and has just become unsealed. That's why we have a copy of it. This is now the second time that a foreign national or foreign nationals have been able to basically flow money through U.S. persons into a political account or campaign account or some sort of a pro-President Trump fund.
Wow. Okay, so that's Tom Winters from NBC News. Since that that report, there have been more developments just coming, one after another after another. Here's a couple. Caitlin Collins of CNN tweeted, the U.S. attorney said the $325,000 donation, you get that amount, that Parnas and Fruman made to Committee One, I think that's Congressman One, it should have been, was one of the largest donations it had received. CNN has identified that committee as America First Action. It's chaired by Linda McMahon, the former head of the Small Business Administration. Oh, I didn't realize she was already out. Okay. Then Rudy Giuliani's indicted Ukraine henchman gave thousands of dollars to House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. Oh, and the dragnet gets wider and wider. Lovely. There's all kinds of stuff. Empty Wheel, our friend Marcy Wheeler, tweeted, so 3 days ago, Dowd, he's the attorney representing these two guys, who used to be Trump's attorney. Remember the chunky guy? Anyway, 3 days ago, Dowd says Parnas and Fruman won't testify. Then the White House releases Cipollone's letter, you know, that 8-page letter, refusing to cooperate. And DOJ says U.S. v. Nixon was wrongly decided. Then Rudy lunches with the accused criminals. Then they try to flee the country. Oh, what a tangled web we weave. Yeah. Now, in another story that also broke since I recorded the recorded version of What's News this morning, a Trump advisor says China provided information about Hunter Biden the same week that Trump urged China to probe him. And the same, it was a week ago. It was last week when Donald Trump on live television asked the Chinese to probe Joe Biden and his son. Remember? Trump and his acolytes then said it was a joke. Well, obviously, China didn't hear it that way. The Financial Times is reporting today that Michael Pillsbury, who's identified as an informal White House advisor on China, said he received information about the business activities of Hunter Biden during a visit to Beijing the same week that Donald Trump urged China to probe the son of Joe Biden. Now, actually, that happened 1 week ago today. It was last Thursday that Trump said this.
What exactly did you hope Zelensky would do about the Biden after his phone call? Exactly.
Well, I would think that if they were honest about it, they'd start a major investigation into the Biden. It's a very simple answer. They should investigate the Bidens, because how does a company that's newly formed and all these companies, if you look at, and by the way, likewise, China should start an investigation into the Bidens, because what happened in China is just about as bad as what happened with Ukraine. So I would say that President Zelensky, if it were me, I would recommend that they start an investigation into the Bidens, because nobody has any doubt
right here
that they weren't crooked. That was a crooked deal, 100%. He had no knowledge of energy, didn't know the first thing about it. All of a sudden, he's getting $50,000 a month,
right,
plus a lot of other things.
I should have edited the clip.
Nobody has any doubt. And
all right,
they got
all right, shut up, Donald. You know what? Oh, shut the fuck up, all right. Enough of that. That's when he asked China to do it, and they did it. What do you expect? Pillsbury told Financial Times, quote, I got quite a bit of background on Hunter Biden from the Chinese. Just in case you are wondering, Donald Trump says these things and these foreign countries, these other countries, these other governments hear him and they say, ooh, that's a good way to gain favor with the president of the United States. And they do it. All right. Now on to yesterday. Donald Trump, he had some kind of executive order that he signed, you know, overstepping his authority as president yet again. And for some reason, he decided to do a half-hour-long press conference. One of the things he said that raised the most eyebrows was this.
Now, the Kurds are fighting for their land, just so you understand. They're fighting for their land. And as somebody wrote in a very, very powerful article today.
Somebody wrote.
They didn't help us in the Second World War. They didn't help us with Normandy, as an example. They mentioned names of different battles. They weren't there, but they're there to help us with their land. And that's a different thing. In addition to that, we have spent tremendous amounts of money on helping the Kurds in terms of ammunition, in terms of weapons, in terms of money, in terms of pay.
This whole thing is absurd.
With all of that being said, we like the Kurds.
That's the president of the United States trying to justify his decision to withdraw U.S. troops from northern Syria and allow Turkey to invade and attack the Kurds, our only allies in the region, the people who did the heavy lifting on destroying ISIS. It was just one of a long string of offensive statements made by Trump during that press conference. But you know how he said, well, they didn't help us. They didn't help us in World War II. They didn't help us at Normandy. Well, this is why I love Twitter. A guy named Rick Cole, who is info ops and counter-violent extremist consultant at i3gen.uk, just so you know. You know who he was. He tweeted, the Kurds did fight on the Allied side in World War II. They helped break the siege after the 1941 pro-Nazi coup d'etat in Iraq and were part of the pro-Allied Iraq levies. In 1942, Kurds made up 25% of the force. By 1943, 10 of the 44 companies of Iraq levies were Kurdish. So there's that. Just in case you were wondering, Donald Trump knows nothing, as is evidenced by what he says and does on a daily basis. So Turkey launched its military offensive into northeastern Syria earlier in the day yesterday, hammering Kurdish forces with airstrikes and artillery fire. Reports on the ground paint a chaotic scene with roads gridlocked as people try to flee to safety. And yes, reports of as many as hundreds of civilian casualties at this point. The Kurdish forces now have stopped their counter-ISIS offensive because they've all gone to the border to defend themselves against the Turks, raising fears that this could all lead to a resurgence of ISIS. U.S. officials have also expressed concern that thousands of ISIS fighters who are now imprisoned may escape the prisons in Syria. And when he was asked about that yesterday, Trump essentially shrugged it off, saying, well, it's not our problem. They're going to go back. They'll go to Europe.
Some of these ISIS fighters escape and pose a threat elsewhere.
Well, they're going to be escaping to Europe. That's where they want to go. They want to go back to their homes, but Europe didn't want them from us. We could have given it to them. They could have had trials. They could have done whatever they wanted. But as usual, it's not reciprocal. You know my favorite word, reciprocal. That's all I want.
Oh, shut up.
I don't want an edge. I just want reciprocal.
It's a word he learned last week, and he doesn't know what it means. What a fucking asshole. Anyway, you know, yesterday I was talking with Tom Hartman on this program about what I asked him, what he thought was the impetus for this. What was it, Trump? Was it financial interest? Was it because there's two Trump towers in Istanbul? Or, you know, did it have to do with something else? My husband, David, who is actually on the phone, had a different take on what was behind this. Hi, David.
Hi, darling.
Hi. So,
First, I'd like to say something else, which will tie into what I was about to say.
Okay.
You know who did not storm the beaches of Normandy with us?
The Trumps. Or the Saudis.
The Saudis.
Yes, they didn't either. No, a lot of people didn't. But okay,
right.
Please get to your point, because I'm on a time constraint here.
Okay. My point is, Trump's motivation for doing this is strictly MBS. MBS wants to get rid of the implication that he was involved with killing Khashoggi.
Sure.
He knows Erdogan has the goods on him, and he has the goods on Trump. So he told Trump, you better give Erdogan whatever he wants to give me the dirt he has on me. And
right.
Trump
knows that MBS
has him by the balls. And he also knows that by doing MBS a favor, he's doing Putin a favor. So the Trump Tower has nothing to do with
it. Gotcha. And actually, the murder of Khashoggi happened inside the Turkish embassy, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yep.
So there you go, in D.C.
One other thing I would like to say real quickly.
Yep.
I'd like to offer my condolences to Brad for losing his father 33 years ago. Today I lost mine.
Oh, I didn't realize it was.
And anyone out there, if your parents are good to you or if they're not good to you, they're the only ones you're ever going to have. And when they're gone forever. So love them while you can.
True that. Gotcha. All right, David. I'll see you in a bit. Love you.
Bye.
Bye. All right. So that was my husband with a very good theory on what precipitated this. Turkey could provide an escape, an out for MBS, who Trump is sucking up to. Oh, what a tangled web we weave, as they say. All right, let me see what else I want to share with you before. I've got so much stuff here. Which way should we go? Well, how low can we go? All right, so that's the Turkey stuff. One other thing. That press conference yesterday was so horrible. In the middle of, you know, after my show ended yesterday, and before I finished producing the broadcast, I saw that Trump spoke at this event, and so I listened to as much of the press conference as I could. Then I just couldn't take it anymore, and I cut it off. All the batshit crazy stuff. Well, I don't want to say all. A lot of the batshit crazy stuff came after I stopped listening. So, for instance, this. Trump seemed unconcerned about how his support of Erdogan and abandoning the Kurds would affect America's standing among allies. His answer regarding alliances was astounding. Here, here we go.
The Kurds helped the U.S. defeat ISIS, and by allowing this offensive, is it going to be more difficult in future times of need to develop alliances?
No, it won't be. It won't be at all. Alliances are very easy, but you know,
no, alliances are not very easy.
If you look at how much,
I'm not even going to play it. He says alliances are very easy, and then he goes on to badmouth our allies. He has totally destroyed every alliance we have. He has alienated our best friends in the world and sucked up to the despots and dictators and most horrific, authoritarian figures among them. It's pretty sickening. One more, you know what, let me read some of this to you. You can listen to all of What's News for the rest of the news, but this didn't make it into What's News, and I want to share it with you. Jennifer Griffin is a national security reporter for Fox. Go figure. She tweeted a whole Twitter stream last night about a conversation she had with a man she describes as a distraught U.S. Special Forces soldier who has been serving alongside the SDF Kurdish forces. She said it was one of the hardest phone calls I've ever taken. She quoted the soldier as saying, "I am ashamed for the first time in my career." Let me just share with you the rest of this Twitter thread. She wrote, "This veteran U.S. Special Forces soldier has trained indigenous forces on multiple continents. He is on the front lines tonight and said they are witnessing Turkish atrocities." Quote, "Turkey is not doing what it agreed to. It's horrible. We met every single security agreement. The Kurds met every single agreement. There was no threat to the Turks, none from this side of the border. This is insanity." The concerned U.S. service member told me, "I don't know what they call atrocities, but they're happening." This American soldier told me the Kurds have not left their positions guarding the ISIS prisoners. In fact, quote, "They prevented a prison break last night without us. They are not abandoning our side yet. The Kurds are pleading for our support. What are we doing? Nothing." Troops on the ground in Syria and their commanders were surprised by the decision Sunday night. Of the president's decision, quote, "He doesn't understand the problem. He doesn't understand the repercussions of this. Erdogan is an Islamist, not a level-headed actor." Add to this, the U.S. soldier on the ground tonight in Syria, according to this U.S. soldier on the ground tonight in Syria, quote, "The Kurds are as close to Western thinking in the Middle East as anyone. It's a shame. It's horrible. This is not helping the ISIS fight. Regarding ISIS prisoners, many of them will be free in the coming days and weeks." This U.S. Special Forces soldier wanted me to know, quote, "The Kurds are sticking by us. No other partner I've ever dealt with would stand by us. Disappointed in the decisions coming from their senior leaders." It's really astounding. And when you look at the images, the videos they're showing on television, this is Donald Trump approved genocide of the Kurdish people. They are being slaughtered. Make no mistake, this is genocide. And it's sickening. And the only good thing about it is that there are, you know, even Republicans are standing up. Senators Lindsey Graham, he's a Republican, and Chris Van Hollen, a Democrat, said after Turkey's actions that they've reached an agreement on sanctions legislation. The bill that they cooperated on would target Turkey's energy sector and military. It also includes visa restrictions for Turkish leadership, including Erdogan, who, by the way, is supposed to be in Washington, D.C. in a few weeks at Donald Trump's invitation. Lovely. Stay tuned. All right, there's one other thing I want to play for you before we get Howie Klein on the line. And this, despite all the lies and all the bullshit spewing from Trump's mouth at that press conference yesterday, for some reason, he went off on a tangent about going to Dover Air Force Base, the remains of soldiers killed in action were returned. There's a reason cameras are not allowed there. It's to give the families privacy. It is the most personal, private moment that I'm sure they don't want to share with anyone. And Donald Trump essentially acted as a camera telling all these people's secrets to the world in a disgusting, just a cloying, disgusting manner. I'm going to play it. Because, you know, I probably shouldn't, but I will. Because in case you didn't hear it, you need to know how evil this man is.
I go to Dover when I can, but it's so devastating for the parents that, you know, it's so devastating. When they bring that boy or young woman.
You know what? I'm sorry. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to assault your ears, and I'm not going to. It just turns my stomach. Just know his comments on being there and witnessing the family's agony when their remains of their family member who were killed overseas for, you know, I'm sorry, no good reason whatsoever. The way he's telling their stories is sickening. Oh my God, got to get this guy out of office. He's just so despicable. Ugh. All right. Yeah, sorry. Sorry for even, you know, thinking I should play it. You know where I'm coming from and wanting to hear it, because people need to know the shit this asshole says. But it doesn't mean I need to assault your eardrums. You know, we're better off not hearing it. All right. Well, it is Thursday, so you know what that means, right? It's time to mix up those Dirty Debbies.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog Special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Well, it's probably Rudy Giuliani's two Ukrainian henchmen, right, Howie?
No doubt about it. Wow, were they handing out the money to Republicans? Yeah, you know, when I first read about this, I saw it in the Wall Street Journal.
Uh-huh.
I thought to myself, I know those two. I know those names.
Really?
And then I remembered last July, I wrote a story about them, a campaign finance story about how they were handing out hundreds of thousands of dollars to Republicans. I mean, in a really intricate, very, very planned way. I mean, not only were they giving maximum donations to some of the crooked Republicans, but they were going state to state and handing out large donations in I don't know, 15, 20 states.
Wow.
And I think someone put them up to that. Someone told them where to put this money, as well as, you know, giant sums to the NRC. This is all illegal. This is all Ukrainian money that they were money laundering into the U.S. Campaigns.
Wow.
for the Republicans.
That's hysterical. I mean, not funny, but you know, weird. And now today we learned, and I'm sure we'll hear more names as the story progresses. But Kevin McCarthy is the recipient of thousands of dollars from these two.
No doubt about it. And Pete Sessions was a major crony of theirs and getting lots of bribes.
Congressman won.
And they wanted specific things, by the way. This wasn't just to help the Republicans, although it was partially that. But they were looking for licenses to sell marijuana, for example. So they were giving money to politicians in Nevada to get that specifically. And everywhere around, they were trying to get specific things done for themselves and for Ukraine. They were giving money out, for example, Pete Sessions, who, although he was defeated at the time, mm-hmm. he was a congressman from the Dallas area of Texas. He's now running in a different district because he was defeated by Colin Allred in 2018. But in any case, he wanted him. He was a very powerful Republican and a committee chair. He wanted him to get the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine fired, which has happened. She was fired. And they gave him a great deal of money and let him direct other money to other places. So very, very, very crooked. And now one of the questions people have to ask, but they won't, is are they going to give back that money? Are they going to be forced to give back that money? We're talking about Well, no one knows exactly how much, but at least $500,000 at minimum, but it could be very, very much more than that.
Wow. That it's astounding. And again, this is just breaking today. You know, the more I hear about
it. No, I was writing about it in July.
Oh, you wrote about it
in
July.
As of July, I had all the money written down and where they were giving it.
That's amazing. And actually, BuzzFeed News has been on this story, too, for a few months. And I guess just today with the Wall Street Journal and the indictment, it's now, I guess, common knowledge. But there were a few intrepid reporters out there like you following the
information.
Money.
I mean, the original, I found my original information about where the money came from, but it was BuzzFeed News that turned me on to these two guys.
Wow. Yeah. So they again, they're up with an update on the story, but they've had, you're right, since July, their original story was published in July. So at least some people have been aware.
And then
of
I started looking into where the money was going. Mm-hmm. And it was shocking how it was, you know, very, very, very targeted money to do things that they want to do. That is the definition of bribery, by the way.
Right. And now we learn that these two were arrested last night at Dulles.
Fleeing
the country with one-way tickets to Vienna. Now, Rudy Giuliani's trying to say, oh, well, they were going on a business trip and I was going to meet them back here in a few days. Well, if that was the case, they'd have return trip. They'd have round-trip tickets, number one. Number two, they had lunch with Rudy Giuliani yesterday right before they left for the airport.
Were arrested. That's right. Hours before they were arrested, they were eating with Rudy Giuliani.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw the picture that I put up on Twitter of them with Trump Jr.
Yes, I did.
Having lunch.
Yes, how interesting.
And I mean, the funny thing is I was getting attacked for making up a story that they had any kind of connection with Trump's son. And, you know, these people were sending me like really nasty notes. Like, you know, one was a threat, which I've already sent off to the appropriate authorities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I sent a picture.
Right.
You know, it's like, and what I said was, it wasn't like the restaurant was so crowded that they had to have random strangers sitting at the same tables with each other. I mean, this was Trump Jr. and one of his pals sitting with these two criminals.
Yeah, but I wonder who tipped them off yesterday to the fact that they were going to be arrested. Who tipped them off that there was an indictment with their names on it? Somebody told them.
Could be Bill Barr.
Could be.
Easily.
Could be.
I mean, that whole Justice Department is completely honeycombed with these Trump people now. You know, I mean, you can see what's happening in the House. I mean, they're afraid to bring in the whistleblower because how many minutes will it take before the whistleblower is in front of a congressional committee that you've got like 10 Republicans calling the White House and sending pictures.
Exactly.
And telling who it is.
Yeah. That's why they're talking about doing it at a remote location, having this person perhaps testify by phone, disguising them, putting them behind a screen. I mean, they need to protect the whistleblower's identity.
All that. I mean, you know, I mean, that's impossible to do.
Yeah.
Because then Trump will claim that it's all fake.
Yes. Well, he's going to claim that anyway. The same way he'll claim whoever the Democratic nominee is, whether it's Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden, God forbid, that person is a socialist. As if,
right.
You know, that's right.
And doing business with Ukraine, which is a place that most Americans couldn't find in a million years. Although you did mention something recently about in the last couple of minutes about Vienna.
Yes.
I'll give you a hint. Very close to Vienna.
Uh-huh. Vienna is in Austria, in case people were wondering. So, Howie Klein, you know, this brings up another thing that I wanted to ask you about. You are the most prolific traveler that I know. In fact, a lot of people don't realize that you have another blog other than downwithtyranny.com. It's the Around the World blog at aroundtheworld.blogspot.com. Now, you haven't updated it much recently, but it details your world travels. And so, of course, I know that, you know, the news that dominated the last 2 days with Trump sidling up to President Erdogan of Turkey to the point of pulling the troops out of Syria to clear the path for them to invade and exterminate our allies, the Kurds. I wanted to ask you about Turkey. I know you've been there many times. And in fact, if I recall correctly, you have one particular hotel that you say is one of your favorite places in the world.
I have a few.
Turkey
is one of my favorite places
in
the world. I love Turkey. And there are a few places that I go. In fact, there was one I can't even remember the town anymore. It's been so long. But there was one in the Cappadocia region of Turkey, which is an incredible, amazing place that not enough people go to. One of the most bizarre and wonderful places on earth, with great food. And there's one hotel that's literally built into the side of a cave. This was the first one. It's a really wonderful hotel. And it, for a time there, I got very, very friendly with the people who own it. And they were literally, anyone who went to the hotel and said, Howie Klein sent me, we automatically get a discount.
Really?
A sizable discount.
Wow.
But anyway, probably what you're thinking about is there's a Four Seasons
in Istanbul
that was rated as the best Four Seasons in all of Europe.
Okay.
And it's in Istanbul. And I stayed there recently. And I've been to Turkey many times. The first time I was there was in 1969. I was just a kid. And at that time in my life, I was sleeping in my VW van.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't even stay in a hotel. But I've been back to Turkey many, many, many times. You know, there's something, I know I'm getting off the top
That's okay.
a little bit, but
That's
there's
fine.
Something called conventional wisdom. And there was this hippie conventional wisdom back in the late 60s that included it. You get through Turkey as quickly as you can. You know, just you know, you don't want to hang out with the people. You don't want to know the people. You don't want to know the culture. Just get through it and you know, keep going. Because this is for people on the hippie trail. And I had already learned that the hippie conventional wisdom wasn't all there. But they had a caveat about that, which was there was one little place in Istanbul called the Blue Mosque District. And it's still a wonderful place. But they said, go there, because and just stay there and don't go anywhere else in Istanbul or anywhere else in Turkey. And when I got there, I realized what it was. It's like, it was like Times Square in New York.
Huh.
So that's like Times Square is now it's Times Square in New York is like Disneyland. But
right.
back in
right.
It was hardly representative of America. You know, it was just its own thing. And in Istanbul, that's where all the people went to get drugs. And where the police went to arrest them, and where the worst elements would congregate in that one little area, and play cops and robbers game. And in fact, while I was there, the actual Midnight Express happened. I mean, this American who was got a little bit involved with this drug thing. He was arrested in this place called the Pudding Shop, which was where everyone would hang out. I was just back there recently. Just no one even who worked there even knew what it was back then. But in any case, Istanbul is a wonderful town. I love it. And I love traveling through Turkey. I've been to every part of Turkey. And we just happened to on last week before all this started. We have a guy who goes by the name the foreign correspondent, and he writes a column at Down With Tyranny, my blog, every weekend. And last weekend, he did one on what's going to happen with Turkey.
Hmm.
And he's there right now and reporting from Turkey, a guy named Reese Ehrlich, by the way, who writes books, goes around the world writing books and reporting. And what he said was that Erdogan, who's kind of he can't really say he's a dictator, but he's an authoritarian figure in Turkey, and a really bad guy, all around bad guy. And he said that he had a plan to get rid of all of the Syrian refugees who are in Turkey. There are lots of them. And he wanted to push them into this Kurdish region, thereby diluting any kind of power the Kurds would have. And in so doing, he was going to invade Turkey and smash the Kurds and kill lots of them. A dream for him. And he predicted this on Saturday. And sure enough, by Wednesday, Trump was pulling American, well, I guess Tuesday or Wednesday, Trump was pulling American troops away from the border. They had already persuaded the Turks, I'm sorry, they had already persuaded the Kurds to take down their defenses. And they had told the Kurds, if you take down the offensive, we will protect you. The Kurds took down the defenses and the Americans withdrew.
Yeah.
And this is the most dishonorable imaginable thing. I mean, the U.S. has been screwing the Kurds more or less since World War One, since the end of World War One. After World War One, the Kurds actually had two little republics, one in what's now Turkey and one in Iran, and their dream has been to start Kurdistan.
Sure.
You know, people don't realize that there are something between 30 and 40 million Kurds.
That's right.
It's not like, oh, it's not. I mean, Trump referred to them as a tribe.
Yeah. He's such a moron. He is such a moron.
Horrible.
You know, I did an interview, Howie, about, it was 4 years ago. It was 2015. A listener somehow introduced me to this woman, Beyan Sami Abdulrahman is her name, and she's the Kurdistan Regional Government's representative to the United States. She was then, she still is today. And when I interviewed her 4 years ago, it was just really on background. Who are the Kurds? What is Kurdistan? Where do they live? Do they have a country? It's the most informative interview. And I walked away with that going, God, everyone should hear that. And sure enough, when this all blew up this week, I pulled that interview out and I played it on the show. If not yesterday, then before. I've excerpted it as a YouTube standalone. If you want, I'll send it to you. It is so important because people don't know. I didn't know.
No.
I didn't know. So,
and I know because I've been there, mm-hmm. you know, both in, you know, Kurdistan, if it existed, would go from northwest Iran mm-hmm. through the northern part of Turkey. I'm sorry, through the northern part of Iraq, the northern part of Syria, and into the south
of Turkey,
eastern part of Turkey.
Right.
Most Kurds live in Turkey.
Hmm.
But huge populations in those other countries as well. Literally, one in five Turks is a Kurd.
Hmm. Wow.
And they want their own country. And I mean, it's known. It's almost a truism that the Kurds are the biggest ethnic group in the world that don't have their own country.
Yeah. No. Their plight.
And Turkey. Turkey doesn't want that to happen. So after World War One, when the Ottoman Empire disintegrated, lots and lots of countries got formed then. Syria got formed mm-hmm. then. Iraq got formed then. Saudi Arabia, the whole Arabian Peninsula, Palestine, Israel, they all became countries. And the Kurds had every expectation of being a country as well. They wanted that. President Wilson promised them that. And it started happening, and then they got squashed by both the Iranians in the east and the Turks in the west, and they're still fighting for their own country. Trump degraded them by saying they didn't help on D-Day, whatever the hell that's supposed to mean.
He doesn't know. You know what? He got that from a column by a blogger at Town Hall. It may as well have been Breitbart or, you know, Daily Caller or one of their other.
Drudge that's against him now.
Drudge is against him now. They're all turning against him now, as they should. Interesting that it took this, him putting the Nation in danger, showing his ignorance on the world stage.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, I'm embarrassed. I mean, to do this to these people after they were literally the infantry for the American Air Force. I mean, the American Air Force was bombing ISIS, and it was the Kurds who were on the ground taking back the territory.
Yep.
And to just turn around and like leave them to the mercies of Erdogan, who's going to kill them and their families.
Yes, this is genocide. That Donald Trump
them away.
Opened the door
them.
For genocide to kill off the Kurds by this.
And then Trump is lying and saying, if he does anything like that, we'll be really mad.
Yeah. Ooh, I'll destroy their economics. You know, bullshit. I did it already. What the hell is he talking about? He doesn't have a clue, and he's in so deep over his head, and he's doing everything back-asswards. I'm hoping that some of these Republicans will now, you know, realize what's at stake here and will get on board for impeachment. Do you see that happening?
Well, we finally had one today, although he didn't say he'd vote for impeachment. We'll see if he does. But he did say publicly I told my staff to take me off the I support Trump list.
Ooh. And who was that?
Well, I'll tell you who it is in a minute, but I'll preface it by saying he's not running for re-election.
Mitt Romney. Is it Mitt?
No, it's not Romney. It's a House member named John Shimkus.
Oh, okay.
So he's a very, very senior House member.
Okay.
He's not very well known. He had a little run-in in terms of the public some years ago, and he's sort of like taken a lower profile since then. But he is very powerful. The run-in was he was the guy who was in charge of the House interns.
Oh,
what
boy.
Do they call it? They didn't use the word
pages. The pages.
What do they call them again?
Pages.
The pages, that's right. He was in charge of the page program, and after he found out that Mark was molesting the pages, he talked with him. He had a stern conversation with him about not doing that anymore, and that was all. That's all that happened. And then, you know, another 2 years of molesting pages went on before they finally told Foley he was going to have to go.
Wow! Wow!
But anyway, so Shimkus did go on the big radio station in his district and flipped out over the Kurds and said, he's not for Trump. Now, he didn't go as far as saying he's going to vote for impeachment. And everyone is going to have to, you know, vote up or down sooner or later for impeachment. Everyone in the House.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Senate votes on whether or not to find him guilty or
right.
innocent. If they
exactly.
find him guilty, he's removed as president.
Right.
But I'm really eager for that House vote, and we did a contest recently where we asked people which Democrats would not vote for impeachment, because there are, I think there are either eight or nine right now
who are
still opposed even to the inquiry.
Yep.
So you know these are the most right wing Democrats, and you know so the question is who will and who won't vote for impeachment, and we have 100 or so people who have answered. And, you know, one of them is going to get a $2,800 check sent to the congressional candidate of their choice.
Oh, nice. Nice. So where can people enter this at?
No, it's between the last time I was on the show with you until this time it ended.
gotcha. Okay. Well,
I'm just mentioning it now in terms of history.
Gotcha. I gotcha. Okay. Well, that's a good deal. So hopefully, you know, that's money from Blue America going to a candidate, a deserving candidate. Since I mentioned Blue America, it's a good time to bring it up. Blue America PAC is run by you, Howie Klein, and Digby and John Amato of Crooks and Liars, and you find the best progressive candidates to encourage them to run and help them once they decide to run, help them raise money. All the money goes to the candidate. You're not one of these PACs that takes any money off the top or does anything untoward. You guys are in it for the right reason, to find the best progressives to get them elected to Congress.
That's right. We don't take salaries. We don't take expenses out. We don't, you know, we're not trying to build an empire. We're just trying to help members of
Congress.
We're just trying to help candidates who are very, very progressive. You know, I was getting frustrated because I was getting so many people calling me, and then I would spend an hour or two with them on the phone talking to them, and then find out that they're not really for Medicare for All, or that, you know, they're for like some version of Medicare for All that's not really Medicare for All, like Pete Buttigieg or Kamala Harris.
Exactly.
You know, we do congressional candidates, but you know, but some of them, you know, they like to use the word, but they don't really believe in Medicare for All, and they're not going to back Medicare for All.
Yep.
So you know, I'm saying that now it's the first question I ask. So I don't have to spend all that time. And if someone, no matter what I think of people on other issues, if they're not for the real Medicare for All, period,
mm-hmm.
Medicare for All,
single
not
payer,
Medicare for some and not Medicare for, you know, buts,
yep.
then it's over. And there are some candidates who I really like.
Uh-huh.
There's a woman who's running for the Senate in Georgia. I think she's amazing. I think if she wins, she'll be an amazing U.S. Senator. And I really want to endorse her. But no, cannot happen because she's not quite there on Medicare for All.
Let me
she
ask.
She wants to get to it eventually.
Uh-huh.
She does want to get to it
right.
eventually, but will not campaign on it now.
Gotcha. Hey, Howie, I'm sure it's a small fraction of Bernie Sanders supporters, but they're the loudest. They're the most obnoxious. They're the most vocal and visible on Twitter. And they are going full bore after Elizabeth Warren. All I've ever heard from Elizabeth Warren is single payer, get rid of these for-profit insurance extortionists. That's my word, but she expresses the same sentiment. But they're saying
Bernie's Medicare for All bill, by the way.
I know, but they're saying, oh, she's being cagey about it. She doesn't use the term single payer, and she talks about access, and it pisses me off. Do you have a contact within her campaign who can clarify this? Because I want to throw it in their faces.
Yes, they are. They do try to push back on it. And I do. I mean, you know Mike Lux, right?
Oh, sure. Oh, Mike is a perfect person to get on.
Get your statement.
Yep. Okay. I'm going to invite Mike on the show next week. Mike Lux is a great, he's a perfect person to talk to because he is a real progressive like we are, but he also works within the Democratic Party to help get progressives elected, which is what we need, which is what I think is so effective about Elizabeth Warren, because she knows how to play the game. She's willing to play the political game to say, I got to work with these people. I will talk to Hillary Clinton. I will talk to the Democratic Party. But this is what my attitudes are. This is where my positions are. These are my plans.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Bernie talked to Hillary Clinton as well.
Yep.
And you know, he's been a senator for all this time and a congressman before that. And it's not like he doesn't talk to the Democratic Party, even though he's not officially a Democrat.
Yep.
He caucuses with the Democrats.
He's
the Democrats
in leadership.
Made him the chairman of a committee.
Yeah.
He plays that game as well. But, you know, he makes it very, very clear about what his goals and aspirations are and what he wants to do and who he's working for, the American people.
Yeah, I know. See, and
either one of them would make a great president.
I think so too.
As we've said before, I think both of us are going to vote for Bernie in the primary.
Yep.
And and if he winds up winning, that'll be great. If she winds up winning, it'll also be great.
I agree. But now I'm looking at, first of all, I'm getting trolled by people on Twitter again. But Alan Parker, who's somebody, a listener that I've known for years, who's in the chat room at YouTube, and he says, Warren is Obama 2.0.
Oh,
you
want to,
exactly. Thank you. I'm so sick of that. No, she isn't. You know what? She's not Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is Bernie Sanders. But she's...
Bernie is better. Oh. I mean, you know, yes, Bernie is better. But get off it. You know, if he wins, great. We should do everything we can to get him to win. And if he doesn't win, she's not so terrible. I'm sure Bernie will be fighting for her like he's never fought in his life for anything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think he would say the same thing that I say, which is, you know what? If Bernie can't win, and he's got an uphill climb, and I think he knows it, if he can't win, we'd be very well served to have Elizabeth Warren. He's still my first choice, but I think she'd be wonderful. And I think she'd be really effective president. Ideally.
I mean, how excited was everybody when she ran for the U.S. Senate?
I know.
And then ran for re-election.
I mean,
we were all very, very excited. She's been a wonderful member of Congress.
Exactly. So the smears get really old. And it's ugly. I push back on them whenever I can. Because that attitude.
That's probably why they bother you and not
exactly.
me.
Exactly. But that attitude is going to be what gives us another Trump term, which will kill us. We will not survive another Trump term.
Right.
Yeah.
Or a Pence term, whatever
it's going
to be.
Oh, God forbid. You know, I wanted to. We're running out of time. We've only got like a minute left. I know you've got a new piece going up at downwithtyranny.com as soon as we're done. But the lead story, the top story now, is about Betsy DeVos. In about a minute, can you tell us, is she going to go to jail?
Well, good question. She should. And Congress is, you know, it's funny because the Republicans say the Democrats aren't doing anything but impeaching Trump. They're not doing anything else. Well, here's a good example of some other things that they're doing. They're looking into, you know, her corrupt nature and her, the way she's handling the Department of Education is just horrible. And fortunately, Jamie Raskin and Andy Levin are both on the case. And a lot of candidates and members of Congress are very, very upset by the way she is handling her job from top to bottom. Everything she's doing is just horrendous, as could have been expected.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, she's doing, well, unfortunately, she's doing stuff that's highly illegal. And hopefully after they can get rid of Trump, they'll get rid of her, too.
Let's do it.
We'll definitely get rid of her after.
DeVos for prison, 2020. Howie Klein, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. People, go to downwithtyranny.com and read the blog, and then click on the Blue America thermometer and help support progressive candidates. Thanks, Howie. I'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
All right. And you, I will see you back here tomorrow. Gotta Laugh wasn't here on Tuesday. She will be here tomorrow. And I'm heading over to the broadcast again. So I'll see you later. Thanks for listening, everyone.